I'm Michelle Ely from the Starling Tribune, an Arrow TV show fan podcast, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other amazing geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
I am the Green Arrow.
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I am the chief editor tonight. My name is SP, and your other reporters for this episode number 226 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
It's like the ghost of villains past in here.
We'll talk about Curtis in this episode later. And Michelle.
Argus thanks you for your cooperation.
Indeed. And once again, we'll talk about Curtis later in this episode. This podcast is recorded on Thursday, January 31st, 2019, live on Geeks.live.
That's right. And this evening, we'll be discussing the latest episode of Arrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past week that could and most likely will impact future episodes of Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Black Lightning, and the rest of the DC television universe.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Michelle, why don't you go ahead and break down this episode of Arrow for us?
Sure thing. This episode is called Past Sins. It's Season 7, Episode 11. It aired Monday, January 28th, 2019. It was directed by David Ramsey. This guy, he plays, oh yeah, Diggle. This is his first directing credit, so good job, David. It was written by Anna Lee Hunter. Credits include 2 episodes of Arrow and 7 of The Last Ship. And Tanya Kong. Credits include 2 episodes of Arrow, 1 Daredevil, and has been the story editor for Arrow and Daredevil.
Wow. So we got the guy who plays Diggle directing. We've got one of the great writers from The Last Ship, a guilty pleasure of mine. That show is now in finale. It is no longer going to be airing any new episodes. And then we've got Tanya Kong, who's been a story editor. Wow. What a great trio. And once again, Beth Schwartz has put together a great creative team for this episode. Look for great creative teams throughout this season, because Beth knows how to cultivate talent. Now, we're going to talk about the ratings for all these shows on the CW. We do it every week. The DC comic book shows, by the way, on the CW. These are just the live ratings. And then after we talk into Legends of Tomorrow, which we won't talk this week, but we do the Live Plus 7. But this is just the live ratings. So we're going to start on Sunday, the 27th. Of January, Supergirl aired the 11th episode of the 4th season, named Blood Memory, to a live rating of 1.34. That is, I believe, up from the previous week. And that is not surprising since there was no football on. And then Monday, the 28th of January, Arrow aired this episode, Past Sins, to a live rating of 1.18. Following Arrow, Black Lightning aired the 11th episode of the 2nd season, The Book of Secrets, Chapter 1, Prodigal Son, to a live rating of 0.93. I do believe that is up from the previous week as well. And then Tuesday, the 29th of January, Flash aired a memory episode with the 12th episode of the 5th season. They're ahead because they were thinking they were going to have to take a week off for the State of the Union address, to a live rating of 1.02. Episode title was Memorabilia. Guys, I'm actually pretty impressed at these ratings given the past weeks. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, solid ratings. Things are looking upwards, which might be good for these programs. Hint, hint, wait for the news.
I can't wait. So, Michelle, we often talk about the overall theme of the episode and we correlate it to the title of the episode. And since this title is Past Sins, what do you got for us?
Well, we have several characters dealing with past sins. Oliver with his father, Diggle and Curtis with the Ghost Initiative, and of course, Laurel. And I want to start with Laurel because there was a very interesting development in her character. One being, all of a sudden, I guess she's besties with Felicity because they had a girls' night out over wine, of course, because Felicity and wine. Now, of course, Chris being our resident expert on Laurel, what do you think about her storyline in this episode with her past sins?
We knew it was coming. We knew the big redemption where everything seems forgotten and forgiven, it was coming up. And we got it this episode because, what was it, when she was doing the interview with Oliver at the beginning of the episode, Felicity comments to Oliver, "Boy, you almost couldn't tell that you don't like her." And he's like, "What kind of do?" And I was like, okay, here comes that one. Then she's drinking wine with Felicity as her bestie, using Felicity's technology to hunt folks down, having Felicity pull her out from doing something terrible. And then Dinah at the end is doing her a solid, even though she hates Laurel, because Laurel killed her boyfriend, or former boyfriend, or whatever the hell Vince actually was. So yes, they pulled the trigger on it. This is the Laurel redemption arc. She was going to kill a guy who looked like the man who killed her father on Earth 2, and then didn't because her friends convinced her not to. For something we knew was coming, okay, great, they finally did it. I'll be honest, this episode as a whole I thought was underwhelming, and I thought this was the most underwhelming arc in the episode.
But Chris, don't you realize that if Laurel on Earth 2 only had her own best friend like Felicity, she probably wouldn't have become a murderous, rampaging lady?
Yeah.
It's a great reason to have best friends.
I just feel like that they swept under the rug the fact that, and we, like I said, we knew it was coming, that Laurel from Earth 2 was a hardened criminal. She killed people. She brought buildings down in Central City when she was brought over to Earth 1. And all's kind of forgiven now because Quentin couldn't see past the fact that she's his dead daughter and then brought her into their lives and kept her around and started this redemption arc. I just don't buy it. I don't know that if I were these characters, I would forgive so quickly.
Chris, do you need a hug to start forgiving Laurel? Do you need a best friend to make sure that you don't go down the dark path and keep hating Laurel?
Look, I think this version of Laurel is far better a character than the Laurel we had from Earth 1 that died. She's far more interesting. I don't know that I necessarily agree with the fact that they've softened her into basically being good guy light or anti-hero versus villain who's pulling all the strings she can to survive. That worked. That was interesting. But now you've got everyone that's kind of like, well, she's one of us now. We like her. And not seeing past the fact that she's not their Laurel. I struggle with this. And yes, part of that is my distaste for the original Laurel from Earth 1. And maybe I just don't want to see this Laurel go down that path too. Am I wrong for feeling discomforted with this or just thinking it doesn't make sense? Do you guys have similar, or am I just off on an island here? It's very possible I could be.
Now, remember, we got a new showrunner here, and Beth might be trying to correct the past sins of previous showrunners and try to give Katie Cassidy a better leg up than she has been given. Now, granted, she's been on this redemption arc for quite some time, but I think the actor Katie Cassidy deserves a lot more. And if the way to keep her character engaged in the show is to go through a redemption arc, then this is probably the best for the show. Now, she's not Oliver's fiance, girlfriend, wife, so you got to take that out of consideration. I think we're beyond that for a bunch of the fans that said that should have been what it is. But this is a great way to utilize the character. I just don't think you could have had her be the continual villain, the continual bad guy, because if you did, eventually she's going to have to leave the show. And I think they want her character to stay on the show as long as the show is there. So, I mean, she's listed. She's built. When you bring up IMDb, it's Stephen Amell and Katie Cassidy. They are still listed 1 and 2 on IMDb when you bring it up. So, I don't know. You got to give her a little bit. Michelle, what do you think of this?
I thought it was interesting that, one, during the restaurant scene, Felicity was like, I don't know if I should give you alcohol. And she was like, oh, I don't have that weakness like your Earth 1 Laurel.
That was a good line. I really did enjoy that.
And then there was the scene again with Felicity where we got the heartfelt I think I killed my dad because I threw a tantrum and he went out to get cake. Where before she talked about that, Felicity was like, you know, you've never had any problems talking about all the other people you've killed. How come talking about this guy is giving you problems? It's like they haven't forgotten, but for some reason, it's just like, well, she's not wearing that really cool black leather jacket anymore. So let's bring her in. And then, of course, I think down at the last part where you have the three of them, there's a talk of a Birds of Prey-esque episode coming up. And I think there's the three ladies that's going to be our Birds of Prey.
That seems about right. Yes.
Anybody else that they can throw in there, too? I mean, wouldn't that be great if they could throw Cupid in there?
No. We need Huntress.
Bring back Huntress.
I'm all for that. Yeah.
Well, speaking of killers, possible killers, past killers, why don't we move on to another sin, and that's Diggle with the Ghost Initiative. Curtis had quite the episode being confronted with the fact that Diaz is around, and I like how Diaz reminded him that the last time we saw each other, I had my knife in your gut. And SP, Curtis has a lot of problems with Diggle this episode.
It's been building for quite some time. First of all, Curtis didn't want to go out in the field earlier in the season. Now he's been out in the field, but now he's been hand-tied, and so is Lila, by the way, been hand-tied by Diggle really pressing forward here on the only way to deal with this Dante situation, because they don't know what levels of Argus that Dante has really infiltrated. They keep on being forced away from his scent, and they've had an operation go bad because of Dante, a big operation. So they're really concerned about Dante, and poor Curtis, he's just caught in the middle because they're trying to do sketchy things in order to best Dante. And they were able to get Curtis to agree to this wonderful ploy that they did in this episode. I did not see it coming. And afterwards I was like, duh, that would, it's just total Curtis what happened. So that's great. And at the end of the episode, Curtis turns around and he said, well, I'm just going to fight my own way, because Diggle is hard entrenched in the way he has been doing things the last few episodes, which again is sketchy. And Curtis is like, well, I'm going to do it my own way. Now, I don't know what kind of schism this is going to present within Team Argus or not, but they all want the same thing.
I'm not sure how much of a schism it can present. Curtis is the low man on the totem pole. You either do what you're told or you're fired.
I think he quit.
That was not made obvious to me, but I'm not surprised.
If that's the intent they had on it, yes. I know when he said he was going to do things his own way, I was like, well, how are you going to do that as an Argus agent? So maybe they left it for us to assume he quit. I just kind of took it as that he was saying he was going to try and find a way to do things his own way within the system. Who knows? Maybe we'll get clarification next week.
First off, I love how there was these allusions to your former squad. It was called the Sua, and nobody could actually say the phrase Suicide Squad.
Yes.
I thought that was kind of funny in there. I made notes of that each time I watched it.
I did too. Don't say that. The word that cannot be said, the team word, the team name that cannot be said.
Yeah, no joke.
I agree with that. And you guys tease me all the time about the Suicide Squad movie, but it really made an impact on this show, and the fact that they can't use that team name that cannot be named anymore. I don't have a problem with it. And I'm just glad that they're able to do something like it in order to move forward with the season.
What do we think about the Ghost Initiative just in general? I mean, is Diggle right? Or as Curtis says, there's always going to be another Dante. There's always going to be another reason to have this sketchy team with bombs in their heads running around.
Curtis is right, because this is the second time that we know of that Argus has gone down this path with a different director, of course, but this is something we see happen with our characters a good deal. Oliver and Diggle more often than the others, which is an ends justify the means kind of mentality on things, and that's what you're getting here, because Diggle's obsessed with figuring something out, similar to how Oliver's been obsessed in the past with figuring things out, and then does morally questionable things, for lack of a better term.
The shoe is on the other foot, so to speak, because Diggle is doing those morally sketchy things that Oliver used to do.
Does this feel like our Diggle?
I think it's the Diggle who's still trying to find his new path. I don't think that Argus is really the path he'd envisioned. It's the path he ended up on when he and Oliver had their falling out, where he could still feel like he was fighting the fight, but maybe not necessarily in the way he wanted. And maybe that starts to shift, because it looked like next week we see him back in his superhero costume.
The helmet without a back?
Yeah. Well, no, it's got the back now. It looks like the Magneto helmet almost, with the transparent plastic.
I don't know if this is our Diggle or not, because if you take Diggle out of Team Arrow, what is he really?
A soldier and a bodyguard.
And that's Argus. And the sketchy things that Argus does, which is, it's not the best for him long term, because it's going to eat him alive long term, unless he has some sort of come to Team Arrow moment in his mind, or he actually sits down and talks to Oliver, because Oliver was his best friend too, and you never really see the two together too much.
They're living very separate lives now, with Oliver as a police officer who wears green leather, and Diggle as a counter-terrorist agent sort of thing, or whatever we consider Argus to be here. So those paths don't cross over a ton, although next week's preview at least made it seem like there'd be some crossover. I do miss those two working together. It's still kind of a shame to see them having gone their separate ways, and I hope they come back in some way, shape, or form. But the problem is, with the way this season's set up, they can't really be vigilantes anymore, so how does he become a part of Team Arrow again? Does he become a police officer? Does he get stationed TDY from Argus to Starling City PD?
Well, something was interesting was the notes that was handed out to the ladies, right, in this episode, and I don't know if that's a precursor to the ladies team up that's coming up, or if it's Dante that's trying to get to everybody. And if it's Dante, then you're going to have a crossover between Argus and whatever's going on in Star City.
I wager that's the thread they're looking to pull there, is to have that be Dante, so that this Argus stuff we've seen off on the side that doesn't seem connected in, other than the fact that they're using Diaz now, can then pull back into the main story, and it kind of brings Team Arrow back together, even if they're not officially called Team Arrow anymore. And then eventually sets up whatever's going to happen in the future.
There was a really good sequence where you think the Ghost Initiative members escape with the help of Diaz, because Curtis comes in and he deactivates the bombs because he's on bomb duty. And, you know, there's this great fight. And eventually, you know, Diaz is by a van and then he kills Curtis. For some reason, I'm actually sitting there going, yeah, this is like Curtis. Was I the only one who actually sat there and said, yeah, this is like Curtis?
I bought it until they killed Curtis, and I was like, yeah, there'd be more hype for this. There'd have been more discussion of someone on Team Arrow is going to die or is incredibly threatened or something like that, because they can't help themselves when it comes to how they promote in cases here.
Yeah, I bought in completely, but I was scratching my head because I know Curtis wasn't that dumb to know that Ricardo was basically drug resistant. So I was like, huh, I think he's actually trying to help him escape, but then he ends up getting killed. So I just, it was trying to make sense of it all in my mind, and I'm glad it turned out the way it did. Again, so Curtis, let's put this guy in a virtual situation. Let's make him tell us where the bad guy is and how to contact the bad guy and all that, and then we'll bring it back out and we don't have to use the bomb. I mean, well, what a great way to do all this, and kudos to him. I'm glad he did it, and I'm glad he did it that way without anybody actually getting killed.
They put him in the Matrix, man.
You can go ahead and put me in the Matrix anytime. That steak looks pretty good.
Steak. Now I'm distracted.
Well, the last person who's dealing with sins from the past is Oliver. And we find out that the bodyguard, boy, this is really going back. First episode, season one, here we go. The bodyguard had a son. And Oliver's still, you know, at the beginning of the episode, he's giving this interview and he's still painting his father as this hero who sacrificed himself in order for Oliver to live. And Oliver again was leaving an important piece out. And I guess that's probably why Emiko doesn't really want to talk to him yet, because he's acting like Robert, because Robert likes to leave big parts out of, you know, his own narrative.
To be fair, though, I don't think she knows that Robert killed the man in the life raft or anything like that, unless she also got a hold of the leaked transcripts from the prison. It's probably just her distaste for her father that then carries over to Oliver, and the fact that Oliver then makes a choice to clear the air later makes her realize he's different. I don't know that she actually knew he was protecting the legacy of Robert until he actually kind of admitted that he was.
No, I'm saying that Oliver, I think she equated Oliver to be like Robert because Oliver was omitting major parts of the story to make Robert look good, and Emiko was edited out of her father's life to, again, make Robert look good.
Right, but I don't think she knew the stuff that was being edited out until Oliver confessed to it, is what I was meaning.
Well, she would know Robert has secrets and doesn't tell things because she's one of them. She was abandoned and discarded to make himself look good. Robert likes to make himself look good. So I'm going to abandon these people. And Oliver fell into that whole thing of, oh, I have to keep my father looking good so I won't tell the complete truth about him. That's what I'm saying.
True. So she didn't really know that Robert had killed Dave, basically, in the raft. I mean, she knew he did bad stuff, but I don't think she knew specifically that. So this kind of came as a surprise to her, basically, that he admitted to it. And she took that as that he was not the same man as his father and their father. And, you know, it's kind of funny. The two of them have been referring to Robert as your father or your father, not our father too much. So it's very interesting, the vernacular that they use in each individual scene. I haven't done a full dissection of, like, neither of you two are parents, but when you're a parent and you have a kid acting up, all of a sudden it's the other parent's kid and not your kid sort of thing. So I'm wondering if there's a little bit of that going on.
Because what gets me is she's like, I have no family. And she's saying that when she's standing in front of her father's grave.
Right, because she has never been able to live the life of the family. She felt, as she stated, like she never got the chance to live within the Queen Manor. She always thought what it was like growing up there and that they had it so easy and everything. And so she felt like she wasn't a part of it. I can see that. She knew that Robert was her dad, but nobody else did, except for Moira.
Well, and the only family that acknowledged her was her mother, who is dead. So I can kind of see where in her mind would be, oh, I don't have any family. I don't know Oliver Queen. I don't know Thea Queen. I probably never will. And I associate them with Robert, who abandoned me. So in her own view, despite the fact that there's a blood relationship, they're not family. Now, Oliver might want to change that, and seems like she might be starting to become slightly open to at least discussing it. But at that point, she's on her own in her mind.
I guess I'm trying to rectify, if you feel like you don't have any family and if you feel like you've been abandoned by your father, why do you repeatedly visit his grave?
To stick it to him. I don't know.
That's a good question. Because deep down inside, she feels like she needs some sort of connection to family, or maybe she was blaming him the entire time. She just couldn't get it out of her mind that she wanted to go up to him and, you know, punch him or yell at him or something like that. And she can't do it anymore because he's dead. So she'll go there and be angry at the gravesite.
That is a very good point. I did not think of that. One thing about Oliver being part of the SPCD, first off, I was liking it. But week one, Dinah lets him break the chain of evidence. And then week two, not only does she let him walk in front of her, I mean, I know there's one thing about him being the star of the show, but hello, she's the police captain. But they also enter Hackett's apartment illegally.
Yeah, I thought the same thing when they just knocked down that, opened the door. I was like, wait a second, this is illegal. I've watched enough Law and Order to know you can't do this.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff that is just brushed by the side in this whole thing. And we could nitpick the show and it would drive us crazy. I mean, I tried to do it at one point and other people have tried to do it. And I think there's just some things that we just got to let go because of plot sort of thing. And this is one of them, but absolutely. And maybe it gets them in trouble eventually. Like maybe it actually gets Sam off. Like one of the key bits of evidence was that they went in without a search warrant. So it could be a plot item for later on in the season. You never know.
But I'm not sure you need that evidence because then you just charge him with attacking the police station.
Okay. Then it's not a big deal in the plot then.
Yeah. I don't think them not following Preston and getting a warrant and stuff is really going to come back to bite them in this point. I think it's just, hey, they're doing their thing, which is investigate crime. Don't think about it anymore, folks. I could be wrong.
I thought it was really interesting how we have them going to save the reporter and Oliver's by himself, crashing through the window because we got to have that. And the police in a complete force with Dinah coming in the other way. I just thought that was interesting how Oliver by himself contrasted with the rest of the police coming in.
The superhero landing and superhero pose.
So I found it interesting, again, if you want to nitpick it, when they actually go to the warehouse or wherever that was that Sam was hiding out, and they save, what was his name, Vernon? The TV anchor? I think it was Vernon, right? So they save Vernon, and then Sam gets away. And you'd think in a police raid, you kind of surround the house and you blockade it so people can't leave in the process. Everybody's inside the... I don't understand that. So it's a police tactic thing. That, again, you can nitpick the show if you want.
And also, if you know you're going in with a hostage, I don't think breaking through the window and announcing your presence is the best way to keep the hostage alive.
Also true.
Did Oliver really want to keep him alive?
Well, yeah. I mean, he had that net arrow.
Which was awesome, by the way.
So then he planned for it. But yes, net arrow was awesome.
And it was conveniently the correct size.
Well, he probably had two or three that were, different sizes for different applications.
It really is super expandable. Because plot.
But no, I thought it was cool. Okay, like things like that, like the net arrow being the exact right size. That stuff I can like throw away and toss away. But this whole, because at the beginning of the season, Dinah was all about, I'm the captain. I need to rehabilitate the police department. We need to be seen to be above board. And I'm like, okay, Oliver's going to, work with the police. And okay, I thought maybe there would be some headbutting about like, hey, Oliver, yeah, that's what we used to do, but we kind of have to, do it this way. Instead, she's just like, oh, okay, yeah, you're here. Let's just go ahead and do it your way. And I'm just like, wait a minute. Really?
Well, if Renee was there, he would have made sure it was done correctly.
Sure would have, Haas. The Haas makes it.
If you were watching the video, SP and I are like, we physically reacted to that word.
Hashtag Haasless.
Ugh.
Haasless no more.
Because I think Beth has gotten rid of that word because I haven't heard him at all.
Not this season, no.
Which I thank her for.
Oh, don't worry. I'm here to carry that on forever.
And you want to hear Haas as you're getting your coffee made by a barista, right?
Yes, just like Kendra used to be a barista. I can never let anyone forget because she would never let anyone forget.
And Laurel is your favorite character.
I love Laurel. She is the best. I cannot wait for more Laurel episodes.
Now, granted, that was the old Laurel. That's not necessarily the new Laurel, but yeah, you are president of the Laurel Lance fan club.
She is the best.
So robotic. She is the best.
I love this character.
Does not compute.
Laurel likers do not compute. Sorry.
Oh my goodness. Man, this is also like SP, remember how last time we were talking about Felicity and the DNA thing? Not only is her DNA like you could touch the door handle and she knows it's going to be you. But I guess now she can track your DNA because that's how she found Laurel.
Yeah, I'm like, where's the DNA tracker? I don't understand that. And how did she know that she was going after the guy at the bar at that particular time? There's a lot that needs to be explained with the security system, because that was technobabble way, way too much. I mean, it wasn't even technobabble. It was just, oh, I can do this. Really? How is that done? I don't understand. I can't track my own DNA. How can you track somebody else's DNA?
If you thought Project Insight was a bit over the top when Captain America Winter Soldier, this takes the cake, where DNA tracking somehow. What?
Now, wait a minute. Project Insight, I can see three helicarriers. I can get that with the weapons on board. I can get that. I cannot get... helicarriers can't even track DNA.
Okay, I'm meaning the tech behind it, where they can find a camera and then do remote analysis to figure out whether this is good guy, bad guy, and then blow them straight to hell, that kind of thing. This DNA magic, whatever the hell it is, it doesn't make sense from a technology standpoint. Yes, I know, remove your brain, it's a comic book TV show. That's fine, I'm trying to do that. It's obvious they're setting this up for something in the future. This is the tool that they went to go and retrieve, or something related to it that Felicity developed, I'm sure.
And we didn't get a future flash forward either in this episode. So we didn't get a Renee or future flash forward. You know, that might be because Renee was still reeling from the wig he had to wear last week.
God, that was terrible.
So, SP, is there anything else about the episode you want to talk about?
Emiko Queen at the end talking to Oliver, just saying that I'm thinking about talking to you sort of thing. I mean, we know what's coming, but we still don't know a lot of her background. Where did she get her training? Where did she get her weapons? Where did she get her financial backing? We don't know any of that.
Chris?
I'm curious to see where things go with Oliver and Emiko. That was really the part of this week's episode that I cared about the most. Like I touched on earlier in the show, this was kind of a episode that was filler. It helps move us on to the next stuff, and okay, that's great, but you don't have to watch this episode, I don't think, to have any knowledge of what's going on the rest of the season. I could be wrong here, but it doesn't seem like there was anything essential that happened this week.
The fact that Argus knows how to get to Dante now probably is the only thing.
Yeah, and I'll play devil's advocate here. That's something they'll throw away in the previously on Arrow at some point in time. So I'm not saying this critically. All shows have filler episodes. It's just this week didn't scratch the itch for me. I was kind of like, okay, it's some superhero stuff, but there's no stakes really.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but they've never done a previously on Arrow that wasn't previously on Arrow. They have not pulled a Battlestar Galactica.
No.
You just don't remember if they have or haven't, Chris.
I don't.
Yeah. Michelle does. I'll side with Michelle.
They haven't done where there's like surprise stuff that's never been there before. I mean, the only thing they did was recast Sarah.
Previously on the pilot episode, this actress is gone and we reshot the scene with a new actress.
That you guys are going to love a lot more.
Yeah, we do. On Legends of Tomorrow, yeah.
Well, yes, it felt a little like a filler episode. I think there were some good character moments. And it was an entertaining filler episode, which makes filler episodes bearable.
Yeah, it was good. I didn't have a bad thing about it. It's not one that I'm going to rewatch. It's not one I'm going to save on the DVR, not like the breakout from the prison. Oh, that was good. That's still on the DVR.
Right. I feel like I was coming across a bit too negative. This is one you watch it once and you're good. You don't have to watch it again.
You're good.
You're good.
Good.
Good. And if you're not a Laurel liker like myself, you are bored further.
Great time to go to the refrigerator and get another beer, right, Chris?
Well, it was on the DVR, so I could get up anytime. I just pause it.
All right.
Well, next week is a special episode because it's episode 150.
Woo!
It's technically season 7, episode 12. It's called Emerald Archer. It will air Monday, February 4th. As a camera crew follows Oliver and team around to talk about their past as vigilantes and what the Green Arrow means to Star City, Oliver must also deal with William's return from boarding school as well as a new threat to the city. It's directed by Glenn Winter and written by Mark Guggenheim and Emilio Ortega Aldrin.
Live from the Starling Tribune main news desk on floor 52 of the Starling Tribune Tower, it's the weekly news roundup with chief news anchor Michelle Ealy. And now, Michelle Ealy.
Thank you, SP. We got two news items. I'm actually going to skip to the general DC news because the Arrow news is pretty big. I want to talk quickly about the Batwoman pilot. There's some casting news. Megan Tandy, Camrys Johnson, and Nicole Kang will co-star. Tandy will play Sophie Moore, who is a high-level private security agent and one of Gotham's staunchest protectors. Kang is Mary Hamilton. Mary is Kate Kane's stepsister and polar opposite. And Johnson will portray Luke Fox, a Dark Knight loyalist and son of Wayne's R&D director, Lucius Fox. Luke works to keep Wayne Tower secure in his boss's absence. So I like that Lucius's Fox son is going to be in the series.
Yeah, that's cool.
So do they say when the pilot's going to be filmed at all in the article?
It's supposed to be filming soon, possibly as soon as March.
Okay, so we are talking a fall 2019 pilot and season.
Possibly.
Yeah, that's right. We don't know.
Yeah, they haven't picked it up yet.
Okay. Got to shoot the pilot first, because if it's anything like a couple of superhero shows, like the Wonder Woman show that Adrian Palicki was supposed to be part of?
Yeah, the David E. Kelly one.
And the Marvel, another Adrian Palicki. She does not have great luck with pilot episodes, I guess.
While we don't know the future of Batwoman, we do know the future of some of our favorite shows. And the big news item this week, the CW has handed early renewals to 10 series for the 2019-2020 season. They include second seasons of the CW freshman hits Charmed and Legacies, as well as new seasons of Arrow, which will be season 8, Black Lightning, season 3, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, woo-hoo! Season 5, Dynasty, Season 3, The Flash, Season 6, Riverdale, Season 4, Supergirl, Season 5, and Supernatural, which will have his 15th season.
Wow. A round of applause for Supernatural. Amazing. I have not been following that. I think there's been some casts that have been in and out of it, but wow, 15 seasons. That's 15 years. Wow. That's amazing.
One of the pieces that I got out of this, I know we always talk about ratings and how CW views its ratings and, you know, measures impact and viewership. Well, Pedowitz, who's the big executive, the big president guy, said this season we expanded our primetime schedule to 6 nights with the addition of Sunday, which has been an unqualified success for the network, our affiliates, and our advertisers. In addition to growing our schedule across the week, we also continue to add more year-round programming. The early renewal of the signature CW series gives us a head start on laying out the 2019-2020 season, and this is just the beginning. These shows provide a strong foundation for a multi-platform programming strategy, and we look forward to building on this with even more returning and new shows as we approach the May upfront.
Multi-platform programming strategy. Interesting terms there.
Indeed.
Well, we talk about the app, the website, and Netflix a lot. I think that's one of the reasons why these shows are still on. I think that app is having a lot more impact than we think.
Yeah, it's interesting that he brought out the advertisers there, because if you're watching on the free app, which is throwaway money for these guys in comparison to broadcasting on TV and stuff, they still have the same advertisers. So those live plus 7-day ratings that we talk about when we talk Legends of Tomorrow, they're really important, because those are the ratings that goes into the same commercials that are played on TV are played on the app. I know this because I've watched an episode both ways. And then whenever I watch it on the app, I have to go through all the same commercials, any of these shows that we watch. And sometimes I actually do have to watch them on the app. I'm glad I'm giving them that. I mean, I fast forward through the commercials on the DVR, but on the app, you can't. So it's a good time to go up to the fridge and get a glass of water or something like that for me, or a beer for Chris, but it is a revenue generator for them. And if they're able to do this 6 days a week, they could even go 7 days a week. Although I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Saturday night programming has got to be the worst ever, but they could even go 7 days a week and then depend on that Live Plus 7 day ratings if it's a show that's good enough.
Things are looking good if you're the CW right now. You took a chance opening up the programming, having more nights, it's paying off, and you've got shows that were slumping that are coming back. I believe it was last week's episode ratings, like Arrow was the number two show on the network. Now, granted, Flash took a week off and a few other things, but Arrow, which had been slumping, we had been making fun of last season for sub 1.0 episodes here and there, if I recall correctly, or it might have been sub, like really low ones, especially the Thanksgiving ones. Came back with a boom. If you're the president of the CW right now, your bet in buying into the superhero craze, in addition to the regular teen and tween dramas and stuff like that, it's working and it's exciting. If you had told me halfway through last season that, hey, we're going to get Arrow renewed for season 8, I'd be like, you're a moron. That's never going to happen. And it did. It's good news.
One of the ways that I think this is being a success is because the CW app is free. They're not hiding behind a paywall. Now, it is still just the last five episodes, but it is not, you have to get a subscription to Hulu or their own app or something like that. So they're really pandering to that younger generation that really can't afford separate streaming services. I mean, even if they do have Netflix or Hulu or whatever streaming service that they have, it's usually because they're on their parents' accounts. It's not because they're on their own accounts. So something like this, where a parent's not going to say, I mean, I would, just because I'm podcasting about it, but a normal parent's not going to say, yeah, I want the CW app. You know, I'm going to pay that $5.99 or $9.99 or $11.99 or whatever it is per month for the app. Just make it free and live off that advertisement, and then have it available to kids when they're binging on the weekend, when they have a weekend off to catch up in the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think this is a great strategy.
I'm just really happy that we are getting Arrow, but I have to admit, I'm really happy we're getting Legends of Tomorrow.
That is the best.
Yeah, that was the one that I was worried about, because the ratings for Legends of Tomorrow, even though we just went through this whole Live Plus 7 day rating in the app thing, the live ratings for Legends of Tomorrow were sub one all this year, and I was really worried about it. But now I don't have to. It's our favorite show on the CW network, even though we podcast on Arrow. Although this season of Arrow has been good too.
Indeed.
I know filming for season 4 for Legends is done, and it's just like, I can't wait to find out what happened. I hope it'll be interesting to see if Constantine's going to be around for season 5, what they're going to do. So exciting.
It will be. Because he's very divisive to some people. Some people really love the fact he's on that show, and other people are just like, ugh, they added Constantine and the show just lost me. So it'll be curious to see what happens.
I think what's interesting about Legends is, one, they've put Nate in DC, so we don't have the bromance every week. So they separated Nate that way, and also there's no Vixen. We had 2 seasons with Vixen, and we also have a new with Constantine. So instead of Vixen, we have the Charlie. So it's like they changed 3 major things. And I think it's not just Constantine. I think it's the other 2 things as well.
I'm not totally upset that they broke up the bromance, because Ray is going after Nora. And to me, it would be difficult for them to give screen time to the bromance and Ray trying to go with Nora, because I think that was a detractor with the Vixen and Nate relationship too, because you had the romance in there as well. I mean, they're a working family in the ship. I was going to say in space, but in this time ship. So I get that they're going to have interactions back and forth. But when you have a close-knit couple of characters and then you add a romance to one of them, it just gets really tricky on screen.
Yeah, that's fair too.
And that's it for the news.
Well, we actually had a great bit of feedback on YouTube by PFruit0916. And I'm just going to go ahead and read this paragraph by paragraph, because they are different thoughts. So I just want to say thank you very much to PFruit for giving this great feedback on YouTube, and we're going to respond to it here. So the first paragraph is, quote, I thought this was a decent episode, but had entirely too much Renee. That being said, it did get me invested in Emiko and her hunt for her mother's killer. I'm going ahead and predicted that this Dante person, Dig and Lila, are investigating is also responsible for Kazami's death. Dante slash his organization obviously has resources since he paid for the longbow hunters for Diaz, so he would be able to commit a murder and set someone else up for it. I'm glad the reveal of Emiko came very quickly. Felicity was able to figure out that it was Thea who killed Sarah based on Oliver's DNA markers in season 3, so if she didn't figure this out, I would have been annoyed. Oliver's reaction to the news made complete sense. He knows his parents have made questionable choices, but they loved him and Thea, so of course it would be hard to reconcile that the same parents who died to protect him would then abandon Emiko. Michelle, where do you want to start with that paragraph?
I thought the Dante thing, I did not think about that, that Emiko could have been a victim of Dante, whether Dante is just a singular person or if it's an organization like the Ninth Circle or something. That would be a very interesting way to bring her in and connect her to not just Oliver, but in a roundabout way to Diggle.
That'd be a neat way to tie everything together.
I was thinking the same thing. I did not think of that. I mean, PFruit brings up some great points in this whole thing, so this was definitely one that I had not been thinking along those lines. The other thing that I thought was interesting in this was Felicity was able to figure out that it was Thea who killed Sarah based on Oliver's DNA markers in season 3. So PFruit was equating what had happened in season 3 to what's going on now, and the continuity there, you got to give it credit for keeping that there and that the DNA would be there. So we were just making fun of the fact that it was the DNA computers and being able to figure that out quickly. It's not true in real life. But yeah, it's comic book superhero show DNA, you know, analysis. So there you go.
Well, if she already did have Oliver's DNA in file and already had scanned it and broke it down and analyzed it, then I guess that would mean she could make that match with Emiko and Oliver quickly because Oliver was already analyzed in her files.
Well, and we'd already seen him walk in the door with the DNA match that had occurred too. So she'd obviously had him on file in some way, shape, or form.
And we know this week that Felicity is delving into DNA markers for security purposes. So I guess it makes sense if you pull the thread all the way through. All right, is there anything more in that paragraph?
I also agree. I'm glad that they didn't string out the Emiko reveal forever. I like the fact that it's in the front third of the season, front half of the season, somewhere in between there. Front 40%, let's call it that. But yeah, I like that they're not just stringing us along forever and ever, trying to spark the memes and the internet speculation and the Photoshops. Like, it could be this person, it could be that person.
Yeah, that was good for the first half of the season, and it's good to see the character actually being used on screen and the actual I think the interaction this second half of the season is going to be a lot better between Emiko and Oliver than the speculation on who it was the first half of the season. That's just my personal opinion. Michelle, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm glad it was, you know, very quickly. I'm glad the whole who's the new Green Arrow was solved and that it was Emiko and who her mom is. I'm glad that it's being solved so we can move on.
Okay. There's two more paragraphs to get through here. So the first one is, I really enjoyed the Elicity interactions in this episode. In season 7, episode 8, a big part of their conflict was that she changed. And as Oliver said, he fell in love with the old Felicity. And she said she couldn't go back to being the girl he met with the red pen. I think she just needed reassurance that he could accept this new version of her. He gave her that in the crossover when he said no matter who she grew into, he would love her. Now they can move forward as a team. The DNA recognition security system that Felicity installed in their apartment may be the first step towards the Archer program that's mentioned in the future. I think the most important part of this paragraph is going back to the crossover and the schism between the two that was there because he went to prison and she changed as a part of the whole thing and they were apart, and that P. Fruit is saying she gets that this relationship could go forward here, and I can't disagree. I think that P. Fruit's got it right.
Well, and it's smart not to stretch the will they, won't the breakup dynamic they had there, or just the couple stress dynamic going on, not stretching it out too much because people get tired of it if that's what the show starts to focus on. So yes, you did it for what, 2.5 episodes or so, resolved it, and you can move on. Makes sense. Smart.
Yeah, I live tweet this, and when I go through the feed, there's just so many Elicity lovers, so many screenshots, people going, oh, look at their hands, how they hold each other, and all this type of stuff. So Elicity has a huge following. People want them to stay together. And I do like how it was dealt with. We don't have to go to therapy. I was almost afraid of therapy episodes like we got in The Flash.
Oh, geez, that'd be bad.
The Flash ones were kind of funny, but I don't think they could have done the funny therapy episodes in Arrow. The Flash, you know, has that sort of tone.
Oliver Queen doesn't strike me as someone who would react well to being in therapy.
The other great thing about the therapy on The Flash was they were able to do it with multiple couples, and I don't think you can really do that the way that it's set up in Arrow this season. You really only have one couple. The other thing in the paragraph was the DNA recognition security system is probably part of the Archer program that's mentioned in the future. I can't disagree. I mean, we've been speculating that for a while, so I think P. Fruit's got that right, too.
Agreed.
Final paragraph starts out and says, also, I found it interesting that Curtis was the only Team Arrow member not mentioned as having the Mark of 4. I have a feeling he's dying at some point in the season. Maybe this episode. Lastly, since the show seems to be shifting to Arrow Jr. with the Hero's Kid showing up, I'm wondering when we will see grown up JJ.
Yeah, I mean, they made a big deal of Flashpoint turning baby Sarah into JJ. So I'm hoping we do get JJ. I wonder if they can get the same actor.
Ooh, that'd be awesome.
That would. The one that they had in the future episode.
Mm-hmm. And Star City 2047 or whatever it was, or 2048.
Yeah, that would be cool. I also think it's interesting that P. Fruit brought up that Curtis did not have the Mark of 4 on there. And then there was the thing about the dying at some point. He did die in this episode, but it was part of the Matrix thing, so he didn't really die. But Curtis is not mentioned as having the Mark of 4. You guys think Curtis is going to make it through this season?
They want us to think that he could die, as we saw this week. I don't know. I don't know if Curtis is going to die this season. I don't know if they're going to kill anyone from the main cast this season.
Emiko wasn't mentioned either. Maybe he breaks off and does a separate Team Emiko?
Team Talia with Emiko and Curtis. That'd be awesome.
I'm on board with this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think she'll have him slapping water?
God willing.
He needs to. Oh my gosh. He still gets his butt handed to him from time to time in a fight, even the virtual world. Although I think that was planned, but yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
All right. Thank you very much, P. Fruit. If anybody wants to slip us a feedback either on YouTube, you can email us at starlingtribune@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at the Starling Tribune on Twitter. I think it's just at Starling Tribune, no the there. And we will talk about it on a future episode. Meantime, Chris, if people want to listen to something while they are writing feedback to us, what would you recommend?
So, SP, we've got a bunch of shows in the network, 20 plus. I can't tell you about all of them, but I can say if you want to go check out some good movie talk, you should go check out Legends Podcast, where in the month of January, they're covering Catwoman, Watchmen, Green Lantern, and Fantastic Four, the Josh Trank edition. So Legends Podcast is back in the bathroom of the cinematic calendar, the month of January, and this year hitting the bargain bins to dig up some turds from the comic book movie genre. So grab some TP and listen to their take on Catwoman, Watchmen, Green Lantern, and Fantastic Four. So if you like some crappy on occasion, well, just some bad superhero movies, and you like to make fun of bad movies like Riff Track style and stuff like that, go check out Legends Podcast as they go and talk about these and probably take some hilarious shots at them at the same time. Find that and all of the other Gunna Geek Network shows over at GunnaGeek.com.
Now, I do have an issue with Green Lantern being a craptastic movie titled in this episode of Legends Podcast. I don't think it's that bad. But then again, I'm a Green Lantern fan, and this is the only movie I have to point to. So I guess I just got to take it as I can.
Yeah, I bought that movie because it gave me the animated movie for free that I really wanted.
To each their own.
Thanks, Warner Brothers. I appreciate it. That being said, everyone, it is time for us to start wrapping up this latest episode of the Starling Tribune. So a big thank you to all of the viewers that participate in the chat room over at Geeks.live. But also thank you to those of you that download the podcast over at StarlingTribune.com or check out the replay of the video version at YouTube.com/GunnaGeek.
If you happen to have an Amazon device, you can enable our podcast as a skill. Also, we now have a Discord server, which you can find at GunnaGeek.com/Discord. There's been some chat in the Starling Tribune channel there as of late with everybody talking about the latest episode and the news of the renewal. And remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 7:30 p.m. Eastern and 4:30 p.m. Pacific on Thursdays.
We would love to hear from you. We're the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Spider-Man Net Arrow.
At the Chris Farrell.
You guys are going to love this one. Hashtag Hossless No More.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with DNA Magic. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.